it is me, Sarah Century of the Bitches on Comics podcast, which I'm guessing you probably knew if you hit play. I am playing solo today. Normally there are other hosts, and this is one of the times where the child got left in charge, and I couldn't be happier because I can't think of a better guest to have whenever I am flying solo on this pod. I would like to introduce my guest for today, Taki Soma. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Yes. So you are here for a very specific reason, which is that you just put out a comic. But where would people know you from?
I would say the most recent stuff that I've done that people know me from is probably Murder, Inc. I'm a colorist on that, and it was co-created by Brian Michael Bendis and my husband, Michael Levon Oming. Yeah, and that's a series that's kind of ongoing, and now it's at Dark Horse, and the next storyline is about to drop, so keep an eye out for it.
Yeah, I was going to say that, well, we are here to talk about your comic. Let me make sure that I don't botch this title because it's such a good one. But there's like a hinge word that I always say wrong. So it's Sleeping While Standing, correct?
Correct.
Okay, great. I was like, I've read it like front to back like three times. And for some reason, while is like a word for me. Never mind. This is not important. But we got
while
it.
While is a weird word. I agree.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
it's one where you're just like sleeping. Yeah, it has to be while. So Sleeping While Standing. And this book is by Avery Publishing, correct?
Yes. Avery Hill.
Avery Hill. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. There's a Penguin Random House that does like cookbooks. So don't go there. Go to Avery Hill. And yeah, so this comic is great. It's a autobiography. And there is, you just mentioned Brian Michael Bendis and also your spouse, and they both write forwards for this comic. So I wanted to talk about that just off the top, because those forwards are really just very touching. And you can kind of get this sense of, you know, these are people who have definitely worked together and, you know, have like a ongoing friendship, I'm guessing.
Yes.
Like, you know, it's like this kind of good vibes kind of opening to this book where you're talking about a lot of trauma. So I wanted to talk about that a little bit. Like,
sure.
How do you think that the forewords, was there something about those that you just felt was like very important to the telling of the story?
I would, first of all, I had to pay them a lot of money. So that was that. But outside of it, you know, it was, they both made me cry. You know, they were, incredibly supportive throughout the whole process. And, so they know all the stories like pretty intimately, because I shared, each and every single chapter with them, like, as they're being finished, and we would talk about them at length. So
they had like a front row seat to the whole thing,
pretty much. And they just were my cheerleaders.
Yeah, you get the vibe. Like, that's how they read. It just is so touching, kind of, to open up on this, like, you know, whenever you first open it up, like, I had no idea what I'm getting into, right? Mm-hmm. And you kind of, I started with these forwards and was like, oh, I'm already crying. How fun. Like,
in a pleasant way, right?
In a pleasant way.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like crying because, these people are incredibly just supportive, wonderful people.
I want to talk about how you do kind of multidisciplinary work, because you said that you were working on coloring. Mm-hmm. This you do everything for, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I did the writing, the art, coloring, and even lettering, which was a first time for me, lettering.
Yeah. Did it, I'm guessing, take forever?
Like a long time? Yeah. You know, I'm already a very slow artist to start with. So it took a while. But, you know, this is definitely a project that, like, I don't think anyone else should do it. It should be me, just because it's just my stories and I know it inside and out. So, yeah, I went there.
I was thinking about that because it does delve so deeply into stuff. And I was like, yeah, I wonder how, you know, it would be hard, I think, even to pass like the lettering onto somebody, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's just like, no, I know how this needs to look.
Actually. Yeah. I mean, I do and I don't. Like, I, you know, the artistry behind lettering is completely lost on me. You know, I'm it's just, I'm like, well, this reads well, you know, like, you know what's going on. And like, that's good enough for me. You know, I think, you know, there's art to it that other letters definitely have it down. And I do not. But it was an incredibly learning experience for sure. And I feel really confident that like the next time I have to tackle lettering, I'll do it better.
Well, I think that this one too, it kind of demands to be a little bit on the straightforward side, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's like, where are you going to fit, you know, big sound effects in this? Or like, you know, there's tricks that we see letters doing. I've seen a ton of letters doing just like wild tricks with their work where you're just like, oh, like a street is talking, like this is weird, you know, like, or, you know, you see all kinds of different ways that people can approach things. But then it's like something like this is, like I said, it almost demands just to be straightforward. It's like it demands kind of to keep it simple, I think, whenever it comes to the lettering.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely as simple as they get. But yeah, like I said, I learned so much from it. You know, I did a webcomic like 15 years ago, 16 years ago, something like that. And I didn't know what I was doing, but I wrote it and I drew it and I even lettered it, put it up on the internet. And a letterer emailed me and he's like, oh my God, really like this, but oh, it's the lettering is terrible. Can I help you? Like, you can do everything, but just let me handle lettering. I think I can help you. And so, you know, he helped me through the whole process. So I didn't really learn how to letter back then. So,
and that's interesting too, because you kind of come back to it.
Yeah.
Was it basically just like the subject that you were dealing with that made you want to be like, all right, I'm going to actually do the lettering this time?
Yeah, you know, it's so intimate and everything was so for me. When I first started working on it, in fact, I didn't think it was going to be a published work. I did it just for me. So, you know, I was like, well, I'll just letter it myself because,
right,
you know, why not? It's not for the public. So kind of just started from there. But yeah, I mean, I really like the idea that it's my autobiography and I did everything on it. And that just, I don't know. I think that I couldn't think of another better way, at least, you know. Can somebody else like handle the art better or lettering better? Yes, I think yes. But I think this was the only way to do a autobiography.
Yeah, that's very interesting, I think, because it is sort of at a certain point, it's like, well, I'll speak for myself. I'll make something. And then I'm just like, okay, I see every single flaw. Like, I see everything that I don't like, right? Mm-hmm. But other people aren't seeing it like that. Like, most people are not purchasing a book, opening it up and being like, where are the flaws? Like, you know, and
well,
they're not,
some
they're
people
not,
probably are, but
some
no.
people probably are. They still had to buy the book, so it's fine. But sure. Yeah, it's just kind of like them. To me, it's like one of those things where it's like, I'm seeing it in this way that is just, of course, you're going to be your own harshest critic or something, right? Mm-hmm. But it's like, there's something kind of gratifying about being your own harshest critic too, because that means that at a certain point, you really are just kind of like, hey, flaws and all, like, this is me. This is like what I did, you know?
Yeah.
And I was wondering, did you feel that way about this as well?
Well, pretty much, yeah. You know, I immediately caught like, I think like a misspelling a couple of times yeah. and stuff. And like, that's the first thing that caught my eye. And I'm like, yeah, but, you know, flaws and all, like, I mean, I'm only one person and, you know, it's fine.
Yeah, nobody is, like I said, I don't think anybody is like, wow, you misspelled this word, right? Like I, as the reader, did not notice, I can tell you. So yeah, it's always interesting what you choose to focus on. It was the same. I just had a book come out and it was literally like,
congratulations. There's,
thank you. And congratulations to you. Like aww, this book is beautiful. And you. I'm so glad it was sent over to me by Jesse Post, who actually has sent me a great number of some of our very best interviews. So I'm so glad that that was sent to me because I don't think I had seen it. Like it was like a little bit after he had sent it, I saw like a little bit of buzz about it on Twitter and was like, okay, now it's in my head. Right. But at that time I believe it was like right before the release. I'm not 100% what the timeline was, but okay. I was definitely just like, oh, what is this? And then you like jump into it and you're like, this is great. Like, I'm so glad that this was sent over and kind of like resonant, like in ways that I truly, as I say, you never know what to get when you open up a comic because people like really want comics to be just one thing and comics have never been just one thing, right?
No, so definitely not.
I'd love to talk to you about that a little bit because I do think that this is such a unique work. And it's interesting because, of course, there's such a strong history. I'll talk a little bit. We can talk a little bit more about, like, you know, autobio and memoir and comics coming up. But I wanted to kind of start it out by saying, you know, with comics, there are so many different kinds. And how did you kind of get involved in comics? Like, what was the, you know, the moments that you were like, actually, this has to be a comic? Like, do you work in other mediums? Like, you know.
Well, I first was interested in comics as a reader, in my like mid-20s. At the time I was like, oh, this, you know, Daredevil and Batman's pretty cool and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
<That's> I started cool. reading all of these things and I became pretty obsessive. And at the time I was, working at a ad agency, going to, ad school to become an art director. And while I was going to school, somebody's like, you know, you constantly talk about comics to the point where I don't think you belong here. And like I think you want to do comics, don't you? And I was like, oh, yeah, I really do. I do. Yep. And then I just left. I left school. I think I dropped out the next day. And
like, oh, it's comics now, actually. Bye.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I wasn't sure, like, if I could even support myself on comics. I didn't know any comic artists or writers or anything. I didn't know anybody in comics. So I'm like, well, maybe they're just like dirt poor. And like, I don't know. I didn't know anything. But I was like, you know, it doesn't matter. I do love comics and I do want to make them. I don't want to just read them. I want to make them too. And so I think I was like 27, 28 maybe. And I was like, yeah, I'm just going to make comics.
Yeah, I have had pivots in my life too, where you're just like, you know what? Actually, that's not totally working for me anymore, I guess. Like, yeah, I used to play music a lot. Now I play it as like a hobby, I guess. But mm-hmm. it was like my main thing for the longest time through my 20s. And then, yeah, I got into writing basically just because I was like, everybody says I'm like good at talking. So I guess I'd better try to do some writing. And it actually paid like a little bit better than music because music truly does not pay. Like, shout out to all musicians in the world because y'all are having a rough pandemic and like it has been real hard for you all. Like, it's been hard, I believe, for everybody in the arts, but it has been real hard for musicians.
Yeah.
I was going to talk about that a little bit, actually, because your husband mentions difficulty with freelancing, even in the foreword, which I thought was very interesting. I am a freelancer as well, and I'm always having difficulty with like late payments. Like, you have to do so much invoicing. And, you know, whenever there's other things on top of that, for instance, like chronic illness, or you have a sick pet or something along those lines, it can be really frustrating. And so I just thought it was really cool kind of to lead with that in a way that was like, it appears throughout the work where it's like things aren't always easy, obviously, like on a financial level, and for artists, for the most part, like You'll see artists that are so much more like famous than you that are really struggling and you're just like, oh no,
yeah.
Like that's the worst. Like that person's like, to me, like, you know, that's where I'm hoping my career gets to. And then like they get sick or something and it's just like, you know, catastrophic.
Yeah.
So I've been thinking about that stuff, like Linda Berry or something, right? Where she's like, I had to start teaching because like otherwise I was like not making any money. It was very scary, you know?
Yeah.
You think about stuff like that and you're just like Linda Berry was on like the David Letterman show in the 80s. Like how is that creator of all creators struggling? But yeah, I guess I wanted to talk about that because that kind of dealing with the struggle of being an artist is kind of laced through everything, even though it's not necessarily something where you're like, listen, it's real hard to be an artist. Like that doesn't, it's not like that. It's kind of like a subtle touch to it, I guess, is that there's something really wonderful about being an artist and then also something that's really hard about it. So I was going to just see if you had anything to say about that.
Yeah, well, you know, there's always pros and cons to being a freelancer, being an artist. My husband and I, Mike and I, we're both freelancers. We work from home. So our time is pretty fluid. You know, we get up when we want to. You know, we work, as much or as little as we want to throughout the day, at whatever time we choose, you know, so like we have a lot of freedom and we also love what we do. So there's a lot of pros. In this category, and the cons are, you know, of course, like, you know, it's, you're always hustling. You always have to look for the next thing. While you're working on a project, you're like, okay, well, this is going to last me for this long. And, after that, I'll have to make sure there's another project lined up. So, you know, still a hustle while you're working. So that part is the hard part,
mm-hmm.
You know, but at the same time, you know, I look at like 9-to-5 jobs that, you know, have insurance and like, you know, 401k and stuff like that. But if you get sick or if something catastrophic happens, you're still, you know, in mm-hmm. a bad place, even if you have a steady job.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say is there's really no stability. I think it's like, the way that our society is kind of set up is that like, oh, well, if you're not working, then what good are you kind of? So it's like, I think that that's true whether you're a freelancer or not, as you say.
Mm-hmm. So when I think about that, it does make being a freelancer feel better
mm-hmm.
and less scary. I'm like, okay, yeah. Well, you know, I mean, okay, I don't have 401k, but I can set up my own of what's called a SEP IRA. So that's mm-hmm. what we have, which is an equivalent of 401k for freelancers. So, you know, there's a workaround.
Yeah. And people who work at like Google and Amazon are getting laid off by like the thousands right now. So it's also just one of those things where you're like, well, yeah, it doesn't seem like there's a lot of safety in the way that we have things structured. And that's kind of the bigger issue is not necessarily like, oh, freelancing is a problem. It's like, well, there's like no stability in the job market. Mm-hmm. So that's actually kind of the biggest problem. And housing is such an issue and like all of that, right? So
yeah.
It's more... To me, it's more these like societal, like kind of broader issues. And that's, I mean, it's not like it makes you feel better. It's definitely one of those things where you're just like, well, what else am I going to do? Right. It's like, and then you think being in a 9-to-5 would like break me as a person. Right.
Mm-hmm. I would not want to go back to it. You know, no.
No, thank you. And I've never done it. Like I was working restaurants and stuff like that. So it's kind of like there is no going back in a way because I was just never doing that. I was not interested. Yeah. So I wanted to talk a little bit too, because you're talking about, you know, reading comics in your mid-20s there. So I'm sure you're very aware then that there is like this big, huge history of, you know, autobiographical comics. And so many of them in this world, right?
Yeah.
And I was reading an interview with you where you were just kind of like, I'm sure that some things influenced me while I was making this, but I don't really know what, you know, like I can't think of anything offhand. And I was wondering, though, was there an awareness, I guess, like were you kind of thinking about like the other memoirs that you had read or like the other autobiocomics that you had read while you were working on this at all?
The answer is the same. I didn't have anything in particular in mind to like have to for inspiration or to emulate or anything like that or whatever. And that's not to say that I didn't have any influence. I'm sure everything I read influences me one way or another, you know, while I'm creating. But like consciously, I didn't have anything, in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I was just kind of following my gut feeling, just my instincts. Like I just wanted to make these in the beginning. Like it was definitely just for me. And I'm like, well, I just wanted to make them. I needed to make them. The first story that I made in that book is the one called Box. And it's about a dream that I had with my dad in it. And mm-hmm. I knew I really wanted to capture and remember that dream best way I could possibly hold on to, because it's about my dad who's already passed. And, you know, I can't have him in my life anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, okay, well, I love comics. Comics is a language I really, really understand. So I'm just going to make a comic about it. And that way I can really, really remember this and like really, you know, recreate it. And it'll be here for me. And that's how it kind of started. So mm-hmm. I wasn't particularly thinking about other autobio because of how I started
right.
this book. Yeah.
And the Box is a little bit later in the book. Is that correct? If it's the one I'm thinking of.
Yeah, I think it's like toward the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe like the fifth story, actually.
But. Right. I was going to talk about how because I believe you stick to like a 4-page format, right? Through this, like you're kind of doing these like segments, pretty brief little segments.
Yeah. So 4 pages or less.
Exactly. So I want to talk about this because the 4 pages or less, why was that number specific? Why was that important? And then, you know, I mean, it really does. Well, I'll say this part after after I hear what you say, but I want to hear just a little bit about that. Like, why did you choose the 4-page setup?
It was basically because Box, the first one I did, was 4 pages. And I remember thinking after I was done with the 4 pages, I was like, oh my God, it was really good. Like, it's such a sad story for me, but it's something I really, really needed to do for myself. And I got something really good out of it, even though it was traumatic at the same time. And so when I started thinking about other stories I wanted to do, I was like, well, I'm going to challenge myself to tell these stories in 4 pages or less, because when you're working on a comic page, when you're writing it, it's not so bad. But if you're drawing it too, you live that experience so deeply for so long, especially if you're me, because I'm a slow artist, that you live there so long that, you know, it's all, you're consumed by it, right? So I'm like, well, if I'm going to touch on all these like traumas and just, even if it's not a trauma, just, you know, my memories, I think I can handle it in 4 pages or less. Any more, I might, you know, it might be too much.
Sure. Yeah. It's like, you don't want to like linger on it too long. Like, let's talk about it, but like,
yeah,
let's get it out of here and then, you know, like keep it booking along.
Yeah.
I thought it was very interesting and I liked it a lot. I liked how that read, because there is kind of this disjointed nature to memory anyway, right? Like we remember things badly. We remember things out of sequence. We remember things that other people do not remember, you know?
Like, yeah.
Memory is always such kind of a fuckery just in and of itself, I guess, right? Like it's always kind of hard. You know, all of the time, like I'll be like, oh, yeah, no, this happened then. And somebody's like, that happened like 3 years after that. What are you talking about? So I feel like that time displacement kind of, it feels sci-fi, even though it's not. You know, I think a lot of sci-fi movies have kind of made good use of that. But it's not necessarily sci-fi. It's just kind of how things are. Like, you remember things out of sequence. And so, yeah, was there any kind of thought to that, I guess, whenever you were putting the stories in order?
Yeah, when I was putting the stories in order, I did it at the last minute. After all the stories were done, because once Avery Hill signed me on, they were like, so how are you going to put this together? And I'm like, I don't know. what do you think I should do? And Ricky Miller, who's the publisher, and he was my editor as well, he's just like, well, just keep doing what you're doing, and we'll figure it out at the end. How's that? And I'm like, all right, that sounds perfect. So that's exactly what I did. I just kept going and going and just creating as many short stories as possible. And at the end, or toward the end, I asked him, I'm like, well, I have a few more stories I want to work on. Here are the synopsis of what they're about and whatever. And he's like, oh, these are great. It's like, but I really want to, I think you should do a story on like, why comics? Like, why do you like comics? I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah, perfect. And I worked on that story, which ended up being the last story I worked on. And it ended up being the last story in the book. Once I worked on that one, I was like, oh, I know what to do. Like, I knew as I was working on it that it was going to be the last book or the last story. And like, since I knew the ending, everything else kind of fell in place.
Yeah. That makes sense. Like, you kind of have to pick like a weight point, right? Where you're like, okay, that's where the weight is. That's going to be the closing. And then it helps kind of more like a puzzle or something.
Yeah, absolutely. So it, thank you, Ricky. like, he really, really like helped me figure it out just with that suggestion. Like, yeah, why comics? That sounds interesting.
Hey everybody, earlier today I made myself a sandwich and I thought to myself, if I could rate and review this sandwich, I would give it 5 stars. And I would say, this sandwich is so incredible, it is the best sandwich I've had literally in days. And it was everything I wanted it to be. And that would be a positive review that would help me see what audience responses were to my sandwich. And, it would just be really a helpful system. I wonder if there's another situation where rating and reviewing would come in handy. Oh,
huh.
Oh my God. No, what? You could rate and review this podcast, and then that helps us find our audience, and it helps us find whatever we've lost. It helps us find what we've lost.
Helps us find our socks, our keys, our cell phone. People don't talk about it enough. When you rate and review, it really changes someone's life.
Yeah, it's going to change my life, that's for sure. And we like to read the reviews, the ones that are positive, that say soothing and nice things.
5 stars. We'll give you 5 stars as a listener. You give us 5 stars as a podcast.
5 sandwiches. This podcast, let's face it, is 5 delicious sandwiches. I wanted to talk a little bit too, because we've kind of skirted around it as like, yeah, there's like a lot of trauma in this book. There's also, I think, a lot of learning to function with trauma, right? Like, there's a lot of the process of like, okay, like these things happened and like, here's me. And it's like, I think that there is that pressure when you go through traumatic things. There's like kind of a sense of pressure that people will put on you of just being like, and now do a positive spin on it or something. And that's really just not how life works. It's like one of those things where it's like, you can't always do that. But like, you can say, well, it changed me and I am this now, and I learned this. It doesn't necessarily mean that it was like worth going through all this bullshit.
That's true.
But it's like you at a certain point, there's no way for you to go backward anymore, right? Like, you can't go back. Like, there's that, like, oh, well, what would you have done differently? It doesn't matter, like,
right.
Really, right?
Yeah.
Like, what could I have done, you know? Like, we have these lives where we can't see the future, you know? We don't know what's to come. So
yeah,
it's really hard to, I don't usually try to go backward, right? And be like, oh, this could have been different if I would have only done this or something.
Yeah.
But there's something about this story too, where it's like, as you say, like, we have these kind of 4-page clips. There is a strong narrative. Like, you learn, you know, kind of what you went through in your life, like in your early life, and like, you know, the relationships that defined a lot of these experiences for you, I think take a really strong, you know, standpoint. Like, we know the trajectory of the story, right? But it is interesting to me that it's like, not only do we get this kind of like solid trajectory of like, this is what my memories are, and I'm going to take you through them kind of step by step. But then there is still that kind of like, the way that I think of it is like, you're talking about displacement a lot in this. Like, you're talking about, you know, not necessarily feeling at home with family members, like, you know, being like left or forgotten, you know, and then also kind of like being moved, like, against your choice. Like, you are kind of made to move. And that those feelings of displacement and then like the format that's chosen, I think, really kind of interplay with each other in this way that makes this book truly unique. Like, it's something that, you know, kind of blew my mind while I was reading it. So I was just curious if you had any commentary, I guess, on like kind of how like the displacement and then like the format and the structure all kind of like, you know, interplay with each other.
Yeah. So one thing I remember concentrating on once Avery Hill became the publisher for it was, I'm like, okay, well, now there's an audience. And I, you know, from then on, like, I worked on these stories and making sure that they were relatable. I didn't want my stories to come off as, oh, this happened to her and I'm over here. I wanted to make sure that if you read it, you understood exactly what I was feeling because you felt similar things too. So, mm-hmm. you know, even if you weren't in the same situation, I wanted to paint the picture of like, well, you've been in similar situations or you've known a similar situation and you remember that feeling. So I wanted to tap into that. I remember thinking that as I was going along, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's super interesting because I did also want to talk about how kind of there's entire segments that aren't about you really at all. Like, they're about your reaction to something, but you kind of hand the mic over mm-hmm. like pretty regularly. And so I was thinking about that because some of these stories, it's like you're dealing with someone else's trauma, or there's like a very, like, you know, very heavy hitting segment that is explicitly about somebody that you don't know at all. Like, yeah. You're talking, it's like through the filter of the person that is talking to you. And like, this is somebody who did something that, like, now something horrible happened to this third party. And like, how do you even feel about that? Right. Like,
right.
It's a very, very odd thing. And then also, you know, there's like the roommate who's pro-life, but then goes and has an abortion. And like, to me, there's like this kind of layer of I haven't had the same experiences as you, but you look at it and you kind of are looking at other people's trauma as well in this book. Like, it's not necessarily just like, this is, you know, such a me thing. It's like very much a lot of the other things that have inspired, you know, kind of the same feelings, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It does. It does. Absolutely. I always believe that, you know, feelings are universal. You know, we all have feelings, and without feelings, we wouldn't be human. When I came to the States, like, everybody wanted to make sure that I knew I was Japanese. And I'm like, no, I know. So, you know, it's fine. And I, you know, I always felt like I was like, oh, you see me as the other, but I'm just a person. Like, I'm not walking around thinking in my head, like, I'm Japanese.
Right.
I'm Japanese. I'm seeing the world through my Japanese eyes. And I'm like, I just don't think like that. I'm like, I see the world through my eyes, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I just wanted to like break that barrier of like, okay, so I, you know, you pick up this book and it's about a Japanese woman, from, you know, from Japan, and she immigrated to America and all this stuff. Like, and you know, if you think to yourself like, well, there's no way I can relate to this. And I wanted to break that barrier. I wanted somebody to be like, oh, I totally get what she's talking about. Even though I'm right. not Japanese and I'm not an immigrant and, you know, I totally understand. Like, that's what I really, really wanted from this book.
I think you succeeded very well with that, because I was thinking too, like, I had a dad who was a compulsive liar, and like the way that you kind of talk about your mom in this, where you're like, I have no idea what was real, kind of.
Yeah.
I was like, that is like very exactly how that is.
Oh, where, there you go. Like,
years go on and you kind of are just like, wait a second. Was that even true? Like, there's things, you know, whenever you're a kid, like your parents tell you these things. And this is something I think is very much in this book, where, you know, people tell you these things that really mess with you, because you're just like, wait, isn't there like another part to this or something? Like, can we go back to what you just said? It's like people will say very matter of fact things about life. Like, somebody will be like, you know, whatever, life isn't fair or something. You're like, why isn't life fair? Like, can we go back to that?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you know, like, I would love to, I think that maybe we should workshop it, right? Like, maybe we could make it fair. But it's like, there's things like that in your childhood, right? And I think that there was a few moments in this book where you were just like, but isn't it like this instead? You know, like,
yeah.
I heard this, you know, and like, you know, or I'm feeling this, and I, you know, there's kind of this idea of, you know, you never totally know what's going on with other people, right?
Exactly. So much so that, like, for a while, my husband thought, he's like, well, you know, maybe we should do like a maternal DNA test, because I don't know if she's your mom,
right?
And there was a lot of things that kind of fell into place that made me go, you know, I think you may be right. And we went to Minnesota and we got her hair and tried getting a DNA test. And the place is like, yeah, we don't do that. We have to do it with permission. And I'm like, oh, okay.
It's like trying to go on a mission over here and be secret, but sadly.
Yeah.
And like emotionally abandoned by your parent, you know, isn't mm-hmm. necessarily, right?
Right.
So... yeah, I wanted to say too, like, just very specifically, that I appreciated the way that, you know, it's like kind of it's almost like an open thing where you're just kind of like, this is what I went through. And in that way, it is very individualistic. Like, you know, this is my life.
Mm-hmm.
But there is also that sense of just kind of like, yeah, I mean, at least like you make it very easy to empathize with, you know?
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. I was definitely going for that. I just think we as a society, we're emotionally stunted for the most
yeah.
part. You know, we see,
I agree.
Yeah, we see strength in people who don't show emotion and don't cry and all of those things. And I'm like, I think showing vulnerability and like being able to cry in front of somebody, is actually, it takes a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It takes strength.
Yeah.
And it's just unhealthy to just hold all that in and pretend that life is okay.
Yeah.
Life is okay. Life is actually kind of cool. But sometimes it'll kind of kick you in the ass sometimes, right? And it's okay to admit that too. So.
Yeah. I think so too. There was something that I was thinking about whenever you were just saying that was that I used to be like a no cry person, like throughout my whole 20s. I had a traumatic life too. You know, it's mm-hmm. just a weird thing to have like your 20s go by and you're just like, I never cry. And now it's like literally I cry at everything. Like I watch like the stupidest movies and I will cry. Like I cry. Captain America has heroic music playing behind him. I cry, like, you know, things that like, I don't even know if it's necessarily that moving. It's just that like the music cues up and I'm like, oh, time for a cry.
Yeah, absolutely. Right.
And it's just like, it's like, I am such a better person now than I was in my 20s. And I don't know quite what the correlation is, but I do think that there's no part where you're just like, it was cool that my mom did this or something. Like you're not really absolving somebody, but in a way you are absolving yourself, right? Because you're just like, look, I have responsibility in my life too, you know, but also like at a certain point, it's okay for me to feel like you kind of sucked, right? Like it's okay for me to feel bad about that because it sucked.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I describe my mom as like, you know, she's not a bad person. And I think she's probably gone through so much more trauma than maybe even I have, you know, and I just don't know any of it. And, you know, but it doesn't excuse the fact that she was a absent mother, you know, neglectful. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't make her a bad person. She was just like not the mother I needed.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I definitely get that kind of in the way where you have these experiences where you're just like, yeah, I guess I'm not too good at like holding grudges against people and things like that, because I'm always just like, well, if they cross too many lines, like you should like kind of try to get away from them if you can, right? And that was kind of how I felt, you know, it's like that. But in some ways, that's like me taking way too much responsibility over a situation. But it's also like, in a way, I just don't really want to hate anybody. So it's like nice to kind of be like, this is not working for me. Like, I should leave the situation, you know, or something like that. Like, I am estranged from my mom. And the way that that kind of manifests is like, I'm never mad at her, really, right? Like, I'll have moments where I'm just like, what the fuck?
Yeah, you think
about like your childhood or something and you're like, what was that? And
then you're just like, you know.
Yeah. And then it's just also like you kind of just, it's easier to forgive people sometimes whenever you're just like, okay, I'm just going to like put that to rest in my own self. And like, we can talk about it, but you know, there is kind of a catharsis, I think, that comes from that. And I don't know if you agree. That's just kind of me talking.
No, I do agree. Absolutely. It just comes from acceptance, I think, you know, mm-hmm. My mom and your mom and your lying dads, they're people and they have their own, you know, lives to live and mistakes to make and happiness and all that stuff. Right. And
the horrible things that happen to them that like you can't understand and the way that they tried to be different from their parents. Like,
yeah
there's, it is, I don't want to say that it's a cycle because like, it's something where you definitely, I feel like, you know, it sounds like you have kind of gone your own direction, you know, and that's what's important. That's what I think people, when we say acceptance, it's never like, you know, everything's fine now or something, but it's like, you know, I have to live my life in a way that doesn't kill me. Right. Yeah. Like I have to live my life in a way that where I can still experience joy and I can still, you know, enjoy my work and be proud of my accomplishments.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, you know, like I said, my mother is, I accept who she is.
Yeah.
And I accept that I'm not the best person I want to be when I'm around her. So I choose to, have
limited
contact. Yes. Thank you. Limited contact. It's not like we never talk, but it's very limited. But that's by design. It's not because I hate her or whatever. I just know that I don't have patience with her. And I, you know, old wounds would rise and all those things. I'm just not the best person I want to be. And, you know, maybe that'll change some, in the future. Who knows? But for right now, this is where I need to be.
Yes. And the idea too of like, there is so much when we're talking about like parents or like even any adult figure, right? You kind of don't know them that well. Like it's such a weird thing, right? Like I don't feel like I actually know my mom that well. Like what was she going through?
Right.
No idea.
Or what did she go through before you were even born?
I know.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, I feel the same way. Like I don't really know what happened.
Yeah.
You know, that made her the way she was as a mother. I don't know. And I definitely felt that way about my dad too. Like after he passed, I was like, oh my God, I don't know enough. Like, I want to know more. I wish I knew more, you know? Yeah. We just don't know people. Well, especially family, you know, we just take for granted that we think we know because they're in our lives like a lot.
Right.
But maybe we don't. I don't know.
I think that that does come through in this, where there aren't a lot of definitive statements on people, right? Like, it's kind of this lack of resolution. But I think that that's true to life. Like, you know, there's no point where you're just like, end conclusion or something, right? Because it's very open-ended because you're still living your life. And yeah. I think that that's such an interesting kind of note to this, because I do notice that even with autobios, people really want that ending, right?
Yeah.
Like, they want the satisfactory ending and they want to close the book and walk away, think about it, you know, but have it be concluded in a way.
Yeah.
And, you know, I didn't really feel that with this one. And I appreciated that I didn't feel that way, because I don't see why you would have to even put that in, you know. It's like, we shouldn't have to put things in like a neat little bow, right? Like, yeah, a lot of this stuff is super open-ended, especially ones where you're like, I don't know what happened to that girl or something. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, we have that all of the time in life. The bad guys do horrible things and they don't get punished. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no way that you can even think of like what a good punishment would be, you know, like for something like, oh, you neglected me as a kid. Like, what do you punish somebody with that? You know, it's like they would have to be their own punishment in a way, right?
Yeah.
And so to me, I thought that there was just this open-ended nature to these stories where you're like, you know, telling things that in some ways it's like, yes, that happened in the past, but it does still feel like kind of an ongoing narrative that you're having with yourself. And I was just curious if you had any thoughts about that.
Yeah, I mean, with the very last story, Comics, I felt like it did have kind of a ending feeling, like a conclusion, mm-hmm, but not really. But
right.
Like, yeah. But at the same time, it was probably the one with the most where it touched kind of an ending. But yeah, no, you're right. Like, I don't want an ending because that means that there's no life to be lived anymore. So,
right,
you know, life is about living and learning, and like, you know, there's no resolution to anything because that's the definition of life. It just keeps going.
It just keeps going. And you always, I feel like I have felt like I was, maybe this is like the millennial problem. I'm like a geriatric millennial, like at the very end of millennial. And I was just like kind of cracking up about how like pretty much everybody in my friend group, we all are like, I'm 100 years old. You know, it's like, I didn't even turn 40 yet. And then I was thinking about how I always felt that way. Like, whenever I was like 10, I'd be like, another day, another dollar, like whatever. It's like, by the time I actually, if I make it, you know, if I'm lucky enough to live like 100 years or 80 years or something, I'm like, how old are you going to feel? Because like, you know, you're 39 right now and you feel like you're like 150. So, you know.
I know. But man, I'm working on living until like maybe I'm like 546.
Yes.
But we'll see. We'll see if I'm going to be successful or not. So
you are going to be the one who makes it, Taki. Like, it is going to be you, okay?
But I want to figure it out for all of us, not just me.
Yes. I thought about that too, and you're just like, oh, because it already is kind of like lonely to hit middle age. Like, a lot of the people who you talked to back in the day, like, you don't talk to anymore. And then you have like the people who are so close to you that you're like, oh no, I've like kept you for so long, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it is kind of an interesting thought to be like, oh, living forever. How would that work out? You know?
I think about it all the time.
I would adopt pets probably like forever. Like, I think I would just continually be adopting pets.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, it's going to be traumatic because their lifespan is short.
So short.
Yeah.
And that's something that we have to deal with already. That was something I wanted to talk about too, because, you know, the role that pets played in your life, I think is a huge theme in this.
Yes.
And I did want to talk about that. I very recently lost one of my pets. I had a rabbit named Heather and I loved her, of course, more than anything, like absolutely wrapped around her little paw. I have other pets, so I'm good. Like, there's a lot of people to take care of in this house, but it was still just so hard. And I was like, there's something about this that like, you can't, it's like you she was with me during this time, this time, and this time, right?
Yeah.
And like, you can't divorce those times from being with that pet.
Right.
And I was thinking just about how kind of interesting that is and how tangible it is in this comic. Like, you have stories very specifically dedicated to your pets, but you also give them kind of their own space to live. Like, you talk a little bit about like how hard it was to have a, you know, chronically ill cat, which like I've had one of my cats is chronically ill as well. And it's one of those things where you're just like, this cat was like really kind of had it against it, you know, had it against them to begin with. Like, yeah, in the very beginning, they were already had like the deck stacked against them.
Yeah.
And, you know, so we got to have this like beautiful time together. And yeah, I thought it was really beautiful. I think that like the role of pets can get kind of overshadowed in like a memoir or something like that. You know, people don't always give them the space that they deserve. So I was glad to see it, I guess.
Thank you. Yeah, pets, you know, I always believe that pet animals, period, they're innocent from the day they're born until they die. You know, unlike humans, where, you know, we're born innocent, but some of us can be assholes. But, you know, animals don't have that. They don't know what that means.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're just innocent and they're pure. So, to have them in your life is precious. And I think it teaches us, compassion and, lets us watch, pureness on a daily basis.
Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking about that definitely because I mean, I have like both cats and rabbits, but there's moments where I'll have to think and just be like, I go about my day to day and I have my own life and all of this, and I'll get carried away with like my struggles and things like that, or like, you know, past trauma or something, or you're worried about the future, whatever it is. But then you think, I am like this pet's entire world. Like, you like look up and you just like look at your cat all of a sudden and you're like, it's just me for you. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like you have this house around you and you have your own, you know, you love your treats, you know, you love to play and like all of this.
Yeah.
But it's like, you don't, I'm it. You're like, I am your whole universe.
Yeah.
And what a wild responsibility to have. And that, I think, too, is why it's so heartbreaking anytime they have hardship, because like it is such a responsibility. And how could you not take that so seriously? Right. It's
right.
Like, you feel like so responsible for a pet, or I do. I know not everybody does,
yeah,
but I do.
Yeah.
And like there's something extra heartbreaking about that, because it's like you do want to save them, but it's like there is that recognition of, you know, I have indoor cats, like they hang out with me all day. I work from home, you know, mm-hmm. It's like we are so much a part of each other's day to day that it's like, you know, I might be able to like go out and go to the grocery store or something like that, but, you know, they can't. So, you know, it's just kind of the me show for them like all of the time. And I was just thinking, too, that, like, you know, it really is reversed, though, because anywhere I am, I'm thinking about my pets, right?
Yeah.
Like, did I make sure I fed them? Like, did I make sure this? Did I make sure that? Like, are they going to be okay? I probably should be getting going, you know, like, I got to get out of here to check on my cats.
Yeah.
You know, it really changed my life to get a cat, because I feel like I was going to shows and parties and having a lot of social interactions. And then at a certain point, like I got my cat, I was like, things won't change that much. And then it's like, oh yeah, it did. Like, I like never leave my house now. Pandemic has something to do with it, but
sure,
it definitely is like the minute, like my first adulthood cat came into my life, it was like, I'm just going to be with you now all of the time.
Yeah.
So it kind of goes both ways. And I was just kind of wondering about that, because there was such a care to your pets in this.
Yeah. Well, you know, like I said, they are pure and they're innocent, and we're so lucky to have them share their entire life, like their entire life with,
I know,
with us, you know? And, especially my last cat, Xander, that I talk about in the book, he was chronically sick. Like, a dude, like, seriously, like, let me have a break.
Yeah.
He was so sick all the time. And, you know, my friend called him champagne of cats because, boy, he's expensive.
Yeah. I just had one of those. Yeah. Yeah.
There you go. So you know exactly what I'm talking about. And, but because we took care of each other so much, he took care of me by being there for me in time of need and me, like, you know, taking care of him, making sure he's healthy as much as possible. You know, the journey together was, it was hard and beautiful. So when he had to leave, oh my God, it was too much.
Yeah.
You know, but, so we ended up getting a new cat like the following day. I was looking around and I'm like, you know, I have a dog, so maybe that's good enough. And I'm like, you know, but I need another life in here. It's just, I need another one. And now we have this really healthy cat after Xander, and it's baffling to me that I'm like, you had your animal and you're fine. Like nothing is, what's happening? He's so healthy. I'm just like, all right, this is cool. Maybe we'll get like 22 years out of him or something.
Yeah.
But
yeah, it is interesting. Like I said, I had one very similar, like my rabbit Heather had to go to the vet so many times in 2022. And like, I think I know what you mean, because it's like when you do lose that, it's like my whole year was just taking care of this rabbit, right?
Yeah. So
like that almost makes it impossible. Like, once again, it's just something that changes you. You just have to like live this new reality, basically. Like you can't really imagine what things were like before, because like that love did change you and like made you kind of better. You know, I think I feel like I got better. Like I became a better person because that rabbit was in my life. But it is like that, where to me, I was like, I have to just keep taking care. Like there's other pets, so I have to care for them. And that was how, because people are like, well, you know, you can't like replace them or something. It's like, well, I don't have other pets to like replace her. I have another pet because they need homes and I'm taking care of something. And that keeps me going, right?
Yeah.
Is like just being like, you know, I have to get up and feed them. I can't just stay in bed and cry all day because, you know, this happened or something. Like I can cry, I can stay in bed, but I have to at least at one point get up and feed the other pets. And in that way, it's like, it's healing to have them, you know, to kind of continue it, like to continue the relationship. It doesn't make you forget them.
No, it's never a replacement. I don't think anybody who gets another pet right after they lose one, I don't think it's about replacing
right
so much as you want to place that love that you had onto something else, you
right
know? You know, like you have love to give, so why not a living one?
Yeah. And there's all of these like pets that need homes all of the time, so
yeah,
I thought about that a lot. Like, yeah, my pets are all rescues, so they were all definitely ones that were in a rough place. And, you know, it makes you feel kind of good, I guess, to be like, cool, like, we're cool.
Yeah.
I'm never going to leave you. I'm, like, just going to, like, always have you here, you know, like, things might change, things might be hard, you know, or whatever, but you just... You're like, once you commit to something, it just makes life easier, kind of. Like, I'm just...
Well, they're family.
Yeah,
basically 100%. That's what it comes down to. They, you know, you go and you find yourself family, and you're like, okay, we're family now.
Yeah, and it's like they need you too, and you're just like, okay, cool. Like we can work together.
Yeah, this is a good symbiotic relationship. This is good. This is family.
Yeah.
No, pets are incredible. I mean, I'm like you were saying, like I'm a better person for having pets. And having, you know, and like the responsibility taking care of pets is like, really? It's like, not that bad, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Like I have to take them somewhere if they're sick, you know, I have to budget for them. But yeah, it's not hard.
Oh.
I mean, it can be hard whenever
sure
it gets rough, but it's also like, no, for what you get.
Yeah, it's worth it. It's definitely worth it.
Yeah, I had friends whenever I first adopted, like I have way too many pets now, but whenever I adopted my first pet, like people were just kind of like, oh, but you're like unstable, so why would you get a cat? And it's like, I'm unstable, but like this cat will never be unstable. Like this cat will always have a place to live and like I will always be taking care of it, you know. Mm-hmm. Like even if I have to move, I'm going to be with her. Like I'm going to be with her every step of the way. Like that level of commitment is almost like, yeah, you wouldn't always be able to get that from any other owner, right? Like owners can be really inconsistent. So
yeah,
I'm just like, yeah, sure. My life is like kind of a wreck, but like also like, trust me, the level of dedication that I have for this pet is like something that is unheard of in your world. Like I will take care of this pet forever.
I love that.
It's just like at a certain point, you just, yeah, I don't know. It's like you decide to love something and you're like, well, all I have to do is love this creature. Like that's kind of makes it easy in a way.
Oh, yeah.
And thank you for talking to me about this. I have been processing a lot of feelings about pets pretty much, like, I don't know, since I got my first one, I guess. But mm-hmm. I've been processing a lot, like, kind of over the last month because, like I said, I just lost my rabbit. But it's also this thing of, you know, every moment, like, you just think about it forever. Like, you're just, like, being with this rabbit just, like, absolutely changed things. So it's like such a game changer. Like they make me more patient. They make me more, you know, happy. Like sometimes I'll be having a terrible day and I just look up and like there's a rabbit just sitting there like staring at me. And I'm just like, this is hilarious. Like you're so cute, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, thanks for going through this. I know talking about pets is like kind of rough sometimes, but it's also like there is something just so beautiful about having them.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. And I love everyone's pets too. I wish they were mine.
Yeah, I know. I think about it all of the time. I'm like, could I get some more pets in here? And it's like, you can't. You're like, you are full up on pets, lady. Like, you cannot.
Okay, you have to.
So I have 3 cats and I have 4 rabbits.
Oh,
so that's... my house is packed, like, with pets.
Wow. Where do you sleep?
The cats use me as a mattress. They'll all be asleep. And they also don't always love each other. Like sometimes they all want to be dedicated to being my only cat, right?
Oh, sure.
So they'll all be facing different directions and refusing to acknowledge each other, but like on my body. There's just not a lot of space on my body, so you're just like
hilarious.
They use me just as a trampoline. They, you know, it's like that. But and then the rabbits sleep in their hutch at night, which is actually really nice. Like they kind of run around during the day and like I let them have their run of the apartment during the day, but at night they go into their hutch and they need it because around 9:30 they start to get like wild
where they're just
like, it's like bedtime and you can tell it's like little kids acting out or something.
Oh,
like they
funny.
Just start going nuts and like running around in circles and stuff. And I'm just like, oh my God.
Wow.
One of them I found in a parking lot. Like that's the thing is like there's rabbits get abandoned a lot. So like I just once I adopted one, people are just like, oh yeah, you like rabbits, have this one or something.
Wow.
And I'm just like, because people get them for people as like kids and stuff like that, right? So, and then kids like don't have, they're such a bad pet for kids because it's like they don't really interact with you that much
right.
if you're a kid. Like kids need this kind of like obvious displays of affection, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like a rabbit is like going to be kind of intimidated by you, a little scared. They don't like to be pet on all parts of their body. Some of them don't like to be pet at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so you interact with them and show affection to them differently than you would like a cat or a dog. And I don't know. It's kind of like just an interesting thing. Like a lot of kids will get them and then they're just like, my rabbit doesn't do anything. And it's like, well, yeah, but you leave it in like a tiny little cage like all day, you know, and it doesn't have anything to do, you know.
Wow.
So you're just like,
so they're like, yeah, so Sarah can take care of it.
Yeah. Or they'll just like leave it in a parking lot, like with Lilu, my rabbit, who I just like, I was walking to the grocery store and I just found this rabbit just like sitting in this parking lot. And I was asking around because it was an apartment complex. And I'm like, hey, whose rabbit was this? And they were like, oh yeah, I don't think the people want her anymore.
Oh,
and I was like, okay.
Goodness.
So I just like, took her up in my arms. It was hard to get her, but because she was scared and starving, you know, having a hard time. She had like a little tear on her neck. She was having a rough time. But she trusted me, which is wonderful. And I just picked her up in my arms and carried her all the way back to my apartment. because that was it. I was like trying to go to the grocery store, you know, trying to go on like a regular little walk or something. Wow. And then I'm just like, all right, little baby. All right, let's go home. Like, I guess family. I have another rabbit. Yeah.
Wow, that's incredible.
I know. It is kind of an incredible story, isn't it? Yeah. Like, people are like, oh my God, that's like sad. And it's like, well, it's actually really great because now she's doing really well.
Aww.
Like, she has about like the best person to who could have, you know, happened across her. Like, I don't know how much longer she would have lasted, right? So yeah. Oh, I was definitely like, what's that, best friend?
Yeah, ever that's since awesome. She's
kind of just been my best friend. You know, among my several other best friends that I have just hanging out with me all of the time.
Yeah.
All right. Sweet. I guess we can get back to the comic. So I love anytime somebody's like, a pet, I have a question. I'm like, well, guess what? Buckle up, because we're going to talk for about the next 4 hours about my pets. Because they all have a story.
Oh, yeah.
So that was kind of, I guess, what I wanted to go next is, whenever you were doing this, you know, there's so much of this that you're kind of like working through memories and stuff. Was there something that surprised you while you were working on it? Like, was there something that came up in your mind where you were just like, right, I'm seeing it from a totally different angle? Or like, did anything click into place that you kind of like were struggling with, I guess?
Not really. Like I said, you know, everything was just like, you know, gut instinct.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the only thing that I really struggled with is like just deciding which stories to tell.
Right.
You know, there are quite a lot of stories that I think would have made a really fantastic read in the book, but I only omitted because I didn't want to hurt people.
Right.
You know, and like I couldn't figure out an angle where I could talk about it and hopefully keep their anonymity or their privacy intact. I just didn't know how to do that. So I had to omit those stories, and those were very difficult decisions. And, you know, I still don't know if they were the right decisions or not, but, you know, at least they're not in the book, so I don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, exactly. That makes sense. You're like, okay, well, they're gone and maybe they'll make a comeback later, but we don't have to worry about it right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is an interesting thing, right? Because you do walk this very careful line, I feel like, where it's like, you know, nothing too incriminating, I guess. Like, it's definitely like, this is how things went, you know, in these certain stories, but It's definitely something where, yeah, I can only imagine how hard that is to do autobio and be like, oh yeah, there's like other people in my autobio. Yeah.
I mean, I still even wonder about certain stories. I'm like, you know, you just never know about like people's comfort,
sure,
about their privacy and whatever. And like some of the people's, you know, identities were, changed or, you know, whatever in the book. But I still wonder, I'm like, well, maybe they could tell just because, you know, they were in my life. And if they read
there.
Yeah, then they'll definitely know. And, I don't know if they'd be very comfortable with it. I don't know. Maybe they wouldn't be. And maybe they're very angry with me. I have no idea.
Mm-hmm. And you kind of just have to like let it go at a certain point, right? Where you're just like, you know what?
Yeah. Like I said, I, you know, changed like situations or like, names or whatever I felt was too intrusive, then I would change it. But yeah, I don't know.
Right. Seems like it can get dicey and there's kind of no easy answer to it, right?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, for the most part, like the stuff that I talk about that's specifically about me, I felt really comfortable with. It's like, anybody else could be like, well, that's not how it happened. I'd be like, well, of course that's how it happened. That's how I remember it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I don't think you can argue that. So, you know, I feel pretty confident in that regard. But yeah, I do worry about other people's privacy and what they're comfortable with. Cause, like I said, I just don't know.
Totally. Yeah. And it's hard to know, right? And you can't necessarily be like, hey, is it cool if I like, you know, like, it's not really something you can always send somebody an email about or something.
No, it's because I'm not in contact with these people.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting stuff. I was thinking about that a little bit while I was kind of reading through, but also just in general, right? Like, it's just kind of the nature of autobio. I think you kind of have to walk that line.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to ask too, you know, was there something on this, like, as we say, it's such a personal project. And, you know, as much as you make it be this universal thing, like, it is still very much you, what you had to say.
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to do next, I guess? Because you have this, like, this very, like, heavy personal work behind you. And you work with, like, a lot of franchises and a lot of different creators. But for you, is there a new thing that you want to do that you haven't had a chance to try yet? Or, you know, what do you have coming up?
Well, I just recently finished co-writing with another person for a anthology called Black Box, and I co-wrote with Mark Shea, and he's the first co-writer I worked with outside of my husband. So that was an interesting thing, and that should be coming out later this year. And I'm actively looking for a publisher for a graphic novel that I wrote, and my husband is drawing about Van Gogh.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So that's, I mean, I guess my part is done. I'm done writing it. And yeah, I'm kind of working on, you know, trying to figure out this graphic novel with somebody else. We're just kind of at the very, very beginning stages of it, just trying to figure out if we even should work together or not.
Right.
And right now, actively, I'm, you know, coloring Brian Michael Bendis's and Michael Avon Oeming's new series that hasn't been announced yet.
Ah, I see.
Yeah, so that's coming out this year too. Yeah, and I just keep toiling at a bunch of different projects that I want to do. Whether I know it's going to be published or not, you know, kind of like what I did with Sleeping While Standing. I'm just like, I'm just going to make this because I want to.
Mm-hmm. That's probably the best way to do it. I was going to ask why Van Gogh, what was compelling to you about Van Gogh's story?
So this,
I mean,
is
other
a,
than the obvious, right?
Sure. Yeah. This is it was based, like, the idea came from when I heard about this theory about how he died.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, everybody believes that he committed suicide by shooting mm-hmm. himself. But there's a theory that maybe he was killed.
Right. I heard this. Yeah.
Right. So I was like, oh, my God, if that's true, that would be magical because, you know, my father
right.
committed suicide. So I was like, man, I would love it if that was true. And it just kind of blossomed from there. And mm-hmm. Yeah. And I the story came together pretty quickly, I think. And yeah, and it's about him and his brother, and it's from the point of view of his brother.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah. Because that's somebody, it's like one of those things where they had such a interesting relationship. I think that, you know, a lot of times, like, the family member of the artist kind of gets, like, not remembered, but it's one of those things where I have a brother who's kind of just been so present, you know, this whole time, where mm-hmm. it's like he's the one who knows kind of if I'm, like, venting about something that I didn't like that day or something. He's the one who hears about it. So out of anybody, he probably has, like, a greater understanding of kind of, like, what I am as an artist without actually, you know, he doesn't engage with my art all that much. He looks at it or reads it or whatever, but he's not, like, an active fan or something. He's not, like, following me around reading everything I do. We don't really have to do that, right?
Yeah.
But it's very interesting. Yeah, I always think about the family members or, like, kind of the people who are on the periphery and who play such a huge part in the story.
Yeah. I mean, when I did some research, I mean, they were super tight.
Yeah.
To the point that, like, we know him, his name, Theo.
Mm-hmm.
And we all know that, like, they had other siblings, but we only hear about Theo
right.
and Vincent. And, you know, and they passed away like 6 months apart.
Yeah.
you know, and I, you know, and like, I really, really think that Theo's wife had a huge hand in making sure that Van Gogh's art lived on, you know, but wow, what an interesting art history that family has.
Oh, yeah. And that happens. Oh, my God. History, right? What a mess. Every time I look up anything, I'm like, what? That was connected to this? Like, you know, it's like you look up anything, literally anything. And you're like, that's how it is with us, right? Like, artists are really kind of this like sign of the times. But you look at this idea, too, of everything is connected to what's going on in the moment. So like, you're never going to be able to divorce us of this era, you know, like living through COVID, right? Because it's like, you know, even if we're not actively thinking about it in the moment, people will be like, oh yeah, they talked about COVID, like, you know, or something like that. Like, it'll require hopefully an explainer in the future, you know, or something where people will be like, oh, COVID, was that like, you know, or something along those lines. And how we are with like the Spanish flu, right? Where we're just like, oh, Spanish flu, right? That was happening around this time. And like all this other stuff was going on. And then like you read about an artist of that era and it's like that person lost like two of their siblings to that, you know, or something.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's always wild just like kind of how the web of history just kind of just keeps going, right?
Yeah. It's crazy. It's wild what like, you know, you just do a little bit of digging. You're just like, that can't be right.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
This person's connected to that person? How's that? And then you're like, well, I guess they lived at the same place at the same time.
Yeah. So. It's incredible. It's fun. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. History. Oh, fun and terrifying, right? Like, you're like, both scary and fun and also nightmarish. It's a lot of different things. Just like today is, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's all of the things.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, this has been incredible. Thank you so much for joining me. I ran out of questions, but I think that we went actually a little bit longer than I was expecting us to in all of the ways that I love. Like, I felt like it was a very organic conversation. I really enjoyed talking to you about this.
Oh, same here.
If people are trying to look you up, where would you like for them to find you?
I'm on the socials. Not often, but, you know, you can find me through there. I'm on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, and they're all at Takisoma. So, yeah, you can find me at those places.
Yeah, and pick up this book. Like, this book is absolutely incredible. You know, pick up all of your work for sure, but I think that there's something very special about this, as even if you look at it, you know, for me, I'm looking at it in like context of, you know, any other comics that were released at this time, or you're looking at it in context of autobio comics, or you're looking at it in context of, you know, any number of things. And I still just, it's such a unique piece of work that I just hope that everybody checks it out, because it's just kind of blew me away, honestly. I thought it was just a beautiful, beautiful comic. So I'm just so glad that it found its way to me.
Thank you so much. I am incredibly, incredibly proud of what I did, because, like, you know, I did it all.
Yeah.
All the mistakes and all the misspellings and everything, you know, it was mine and mine to bear, I guess. So, sure. You know, it is, I do take a lot of pride in that, at least. So yes, please pick it up. You know, and I hope that, you connect to it in, you know, in a way that really touches you.
It did touch me. I was very, very moved reading this, and I'm honestly going to read it again after I do interviews. Like, I have this new insight where I'm just like, you got to go back. Like, I read it like 3 times before this, and I'm still just like, go back again, like, check it out, and like, kind of apply these new thoughts. I'm definitely going to, like, you know, think about some of the things that you said. Yeah. So,
well, thank you. Well, actually, if you're going to reread it, I want you to really look at the first story, Adoption.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, look at the gutters and all that stuff.
Right, because it's pets, right?
Uh-huh.
See? So, yes. I was, like, thinking about that, and then, like, for some reason, there was no way for me to, like, broach that, I guess, like, during the interview, but I was just like, oh, my God. I have things to ask. Maybe we'll just have to have you back on so that we can talk about it a little bit further.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, I don't actually point it out and stuff. So, like, I don't know if people really picked up on it, but yeah, I'm glad you did.
I noticed it and I was like, these are animals. This is like, you're talking about adoption. Like, this seems like there's a pretty strong thread between these two things, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, I didn't have to say anything, right? So, yeah, that's good. I'm glad you noticed.
I love that too, though, because I don't think I did notice it the first time I read it, because I was like, oh, this will play into the story, you know, or something. And then it's like, oh, but it's so thematically important to this part that you, yeah, I don't know. You almost don't have to be like, also check this out. I'm making commentary. Like,
yeah, I'm glad. And thank you so much for reading it. Like what, 3 times?
Yeah. Wow. No, we're going to go 4 or 5 before the year is done. Trust me.
Thank you.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it was incredible. I'm all the better off for the experience. And I want to say thank you for even just, you know, as we were saying, being so like strong, I guess, because that's the thing, right? Is like, it really does. You're talking about being emotional is the strong thing. And I think that it was very strong to put this out. I don't know if like, you know, I don't know that if there's always like a great benefit to being a strong person. Like, it seems like the stronger you are, the more you have to put up with. And like, strength comes from putting up with a lot of things. So I don't know what the actual ramifications of that are long term. But I want to say thank you, you know, for everything you did here, for just putting this out. And I think it will definitely resonate with a lot of people.
Great. Thank you so much. That's very kind.
You're listening to Bitches on Comics, distributed by Realm, your portal to another world. Listen away. Find more shows like Bitches on Comics by following Realm on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or at realm.fm.
Thank you for listening to Bitches on Comics. We are a bi-weekly podcast where we talk to your favorite comics and pop culture creators and critics about what matters to them in comics and pop culture, as you might have guessed. You can follow us on Twitter at @BitchesOnComics and on Instagram at @BitchesOnComics. Our website is, brace yourself, bitchesoncomics.com. If you go there, you can listen to any of our episodes, and we've got other shit that we put on tabs. I don't remember what it is. I am in charge of updating the website, however, so good luck.
Thanks for the heads up. I'll go to this website now.
If you'd like to support the podcast, you can do so by rating and reviewing us on iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
You can also support the podcast by joining us on Patreon. Head to patreon.com/queerspec to learn more.
I'm Sarah Century, and you can find me at www.sarahcentury.com and Twitter and Instagram. Still Sarah Century on those.
I'm Essie Fleenor. You can learn more about me at essiefleenor.com. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at @SE_Fleenor.
I'm Monica Estrella Negra, and you can find me at www.audreysrevenge.com or on Twitter at @AudreyRevenge.
Bitches on Comics is recorded by Kate Warner, who plays in the band Churchfire. You can find them at churchfiremusic.com. Our music is recorded by Katie Taylor, who plays as Earth Control Pill. You can find her music at earthcontrolpill.bandcamp.com.
Bitches on Comics is recorded in Denver, Colorado. We want to recognize the indigenous peoples who have inhabited and do inhabit this land. The Arapaho Nation, the Ute Nation, the Cheyenne Nation, and others who have been erased from our history and collective memories through colonization.